One of the reasons you have trouble with your throat is because you drink ice cold water. It makes the throat freeze up. It makes it spaz.
Spaz?
Yeah.
Spaz?
Spaz.
Spaz Lerman. We've got his new name. Spaz Lerman.
You're supposed to have room temperature water.
Thank you for that, Dr. Mirren.
You're welcome.
All right. All right, here we go. Hello and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 18, the penultimate Geek Actually for this year.
Oh.
For December 10th, 2008. That's right.
Been playing with their thesaurus.
Isn't that good? It's our second last show for the year, of course, because next week is going to be our super spectacular first annual Christmas special, and everybody will be in studio for that, which is going to be a lot of fun. Well, except unless Sarah calls in, but anyway, yeah, I don't think she's flying in just for the show.
And that's number 19. I don't like that.
I know. I wanted to end on 20, but no. I can't help it. Unless we do one little 10-minute episode. Just to throw in the middle. Anyway, joining me in studio, that voice you're hearing is Mirren Lee. She's back from the dead.
Hi.
You were sick last week, yeah. So Jake and I had to hold down the fort without
yes.
you. And but the joke of it all is, this week, Jake's not with us.
It's this. You know what it is? It's tuberculosis.
Now,
I just heard today this guy.
You and Jacob are the same person.
You've never seen us together. No, you hear about that guy. This doctor came back from India and he brought TB with him and he's infected. He was working in the baby ward.
Oh, maybe that's what
yeah,
it is.
I know.
Okay.
Sorry. You know.
All right, we're going to make this kind of a short, sharp show.
You say that every week.
Yes, but I'm going to mean it this week because we've got a big show next week, and so we've got a lot of stuff that we're actually putting on the back burner to save for next week because, of course, next week is our big Christmas show.
It's our
Christmas spectacular.
It's our rapport.
We're going to have a bottle of wine, and we're going to have nibblies, and we're going to have Christmas carols, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I hope everybody will join us for that. But that's next week. This week, however, we're going to kick the show straight off into some reviews, because I think that's where we really want to go first. And I've got to start with this because Mirren and I saw it together. Groan. All right, we went to see the film Twilight. Here's a little bit of it for you.
Oh, you can't make me!
You know what you are. You're impossibly fast. And strong. Your skin is pale white and ice cold.
Are you afraid?
I'm only afraid of losing you.
Even the trailer takes itself so seriously.
I'm afraid that you're a very bad actor. Oh, my God.
I have to say straight up, off the top, I had a lot of trouble getting past his eyebrows.
Okay. Yes. Well, no, I think what we should say, first of all, is if anybody out there is listening and you're 15, top 16, you will, and you're a girl, You'll love it.
In fact, props have to go out to our new friend, Isabella, if you remember. Yeah. When we went to see this screening, we went to the press screening last week. We actually sat next to a 15-year-old girl. Her name was Isabella. Hello, Isabella. I hope you had fun writing your article.
We laughed.
She got mad at us for laughing.
The whole audience. Adults in the audience.
At the end of the screening, she was so excited to see this film. I thought she was going to wet herself on the way in.
And then I actually saw a 15-year-old in the bathroom who had been crying because she was so touched.
So
by
she was so overwhelmed by it as well. All right, so with all of that in mind, we have to take into account that the market that this is aimed squarely at is the 15 to 16-year-old
and
girl
also,
market.
Yes, and please understand that if you like Buffy and Angel and all those, it doesn't mean you'll like this. It's not that kind of vampire movie because these people who love it have never heard of Buffy. It's such an abomination. And Joss Whedon, as we all know, is master of the universe. Yes, fair enough, I was sitting next to the air conditioning unit.
Which was incredibly annoying.
And I did have them turn up the sound, but it's still, I'm sorry, they've gone back to the Marlon Brando school of acting in the 50s, the method. And they mumble their way through it. So just be aware there that you really want to kind of sit close to the speaker or something, because they mumble a lot. But it's, yes, you know me, I got a slight stroke out of this. I did nod off at one point and asked you to wake me when somebody got gored. But, you know.
Even that doesn't really happen. All right. So for those who have lived under a rock and don't know what this is, it's based on a novel. Now,
This one is based on the
first novel of a series of novels written by Stephanie Meyer called Twilight. And it is basically a romance between a human girl and a vampire. Mm-hmm. They're high school age. They're both, I think, 17 in the film. Well, he's 17, kind of.
Yes. No, he said he's 17.
Yeah, well, but then she says, how long have you been 17?
Oh, remember, he got bit during the beginning of the century.
That's right.
So he's not that old. He's only 100 years old.
He lives with basically a group of vampires who live together as a family, mm-hmm. and they consider themselves vegetarians because they don't eat humans. They only eat animals. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to mainstream, to use a True Blood term. Mm-hmm. And their relationship is kind of taboo on all sides. Now, that's basically the story in a nutshell. And there goes on this bad vampires, and there's all sorts of action and stuff like that. I actually didn't get off on this film that much.
Politically and culturally, it's pretty annoying because she takes women back 300 years by being pale and wimpy and wanting some big, strong vampire to look after her. She just craves to be bitten.
And when we say, she spends the entire film basically pining to be bitten, and, you know, of course he won't do it. Now,
don't you think the title's good, too? Because it put me in that kind of twilight. Well, that twilight sleep you get when you go to the dentist, you know, it's that, you know, it's just,
all right, the she that we're referring to is Kristen Stewart, who plays Bella.
Which, she looks like a vampire.
And she looks like a vampire all the way through the film. She's the palest one in the cast, I think, with the deep-set eyes. People will know her from films like she was in Jumper recently, which was the film about the guy who could jump time and space. She is going to be in New Moon, of course, which is the sequel to this film, which has already been greenlit. We've talked about this on the blog.
Because it's a smash.
It's a smash.
The monster smash.
It's actually been out in the States now for, I think, 3 weeks. Mm. And we're getting it. It opens here in Australia this Thursday. So it opens this week. It's the December. Actually, no, it opens this Thursday. It opens the 11th. That's right. The 11th. So it opens here on the 11th nationally. It's open in the States nationally. So for those who are our American listeners, are going, guys, we've already seen this. But, you know, it is still opening around the world. And the Americans have to understand that we don't all get everything at the same time.
Yes.
Kristen Stewart is boring as batshit. And she spends the entire film pining the camera.
It's so funny, though, because that's why we were laughing, because it's worth seeing just for how, I mean, I thought Catherine Hardwicke, the director, does these hard things like, you know, hard edges.
Lords
like
of Dogtown, and 13.
Yeah. And they say she's not coming back. Oh, thank God for that. but we had a scene where Bella walks into the classroom, and there's, for some reason, a standing fan behind her, and it blows her hair like
in
slow motion, and the audience, of course, as it should, laughs.
And then we get a swing around camera shot of our hero, quote unquote, who is the vampire, which is Edward Cullen, played by Robert Pattinson. Now, Robert Pattinson, for those who are fans of the genres, he played
Digby. Was it?
Is it Digby? What was his name? It was in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Cedric Diggory.
Yeah.
Cedric Diggory.
That's right, right.
And you know, he was fine as Cedric Diggory and all sorts of stuff. But in this, they didn't have much to do. They've powdered him on with a ton of talcum powder,
and they've asked his eyebrows to do all the acting,
which accentuates his eyebrows.
Oh,
and he's got
God. Substantial
eyebrows.
Oh,
and then to accentuate
eyebrows
even more,
to share with the world,
and to accentuate it more, they stand his hair up on end. And so
it's
like this arrow pointing to his eyebrows.
As you know, I lost my eyebrows as a teenager because I overplucked them in the days before Brooke Shields. That's how old I am. And, you know, I really wish he'd give me some of his to transplant.
Man, they are severe.
It is just scary.
They're severe. But I love this, that reverse shot. After you see her hair
giant
blow,
caterpillar on his head.
She'll turn around, and there he is in the window in the sunshine. I know.
Yes.
The people who... I have read the book, obviously I understand this, but for us who watch Buffy and are
the real vampire
and are traditionalists, these vampires being out during the day was kind of disturbing.
Well,
but
especially
anyway.
when he says, oh, look so horrible, and he glitters. He glitters
just
in the sun.
And
what?
We probably just gave a major spoiler there.
Spoiler alert!
But that's all right. You know what? this film, you know, the ones
it's
who,
a spoiler in general.
The people who want to see it are going to be people who already know all this anyway.
You have to be very young and female.
Yeah, you're going to be young and female. It really is aiming at the same sort of market that The Lost Boys aimed at back in the 80s, which was that young teen vampire. But The Lost Boys had a harder edge.
Yeah.
And they were real vampires. They came out at night, and, you know, there was a big...
And guys, you know, when your girls want to drag you this as a date movie, you know, like, take a... Well, I'm not allowed to say...
Drink heavily beforehand.
Drinks or something. No, I shouldn't say that. Hit yourself in the head.
If you're over 18 and you're in
drink
Australia,
responsibly.
Drink responsibly before going in.
You've been warned, okay?
So this reverse shot I'm talking about, you know, she walks in, the hair blows in the wind, she turns around, she stares across the room, and there's eyebrows on the other side of the room sitting there, and there's this eagle on the window ledge. Oh. So we can't see the eagle because it's behind him, but the wings are coming out over his shoulders, and he's got this brooding look, and you go...
And he looks like he's going to vomit.
I'm sorry.
He looks like he's going to vomit.
And he looks like he's
gonna... Which we find out later it's because she smells too good and he wants to eat her. But he looks like he wants to vomit. That was his emotion, evidently, for lust. I don't know. It was very strange.
The
audience laughed a lot. And
they
because
did.
Most of the audience were adults. So that just tells you something.
Well, and that's the problem. I think filling a room full of hard critics for a film like this is really not the matter. And I noticed that several of the critics actually brought... their teenagers with them.
Yeah.
And I think that was a smart move.
Yeah.
And us sitting next to Bella was a good idea.
Bella says we got to read the books, so I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know if I could bring myself to read the books.
I don't. Well, especially since even the director herself said she's never seen a Buffy. What? What are you? Hello? Yeah. What you talk about, Willis?
And the problem is the 17-year-olds are going to see. I mean, our friend Isabel, she hadn't seen Buffy.
She wasn't interested in Buffy or Angel or anything.
In
no,
it.
And I don't get it. I'm sorry. You know,
we've had so many good vampire films and vampire lores and vampire mythologies. I mean, Anne Rice, I think, she played with the lore as well. But at least, you know, no matter how much you play with the lore of vampires or werewolves or zombies or any of these things, you kind of have to keep to a certain core. And there's a certain core where you go, that's where the myth came from, you know?
Yeah.
And you can mess around with it, and you can play with it, and you can say, oh, some, like with True Blood, for instance, crosses don't actually affect the vampires. And somebody actually says, but I thought crosses would hurt you. And he says, we like to keep that myth alive, you know? And that makes sense to me, because it's like then you're playing with the idea of the myth.
And when
you know?
See it, there's just so much of the casting. The father was wet. The mother
Everybody was so depressed.
The mother was originally on 24, and she's looking worse than ever. I don't know what her story is. You also have to please notice they not only do they all have extraordinarily white teeth; they're getting completely out of control. But the Indian boy, you'll know who we mean when you see it. He's got this lovely dark Native American Indian, and these teeth that are neon. It's quite distracting. Between the one guy's eyebrows and the other guy's teeth,
it really does look like if you were to put a photograph into Photoshop, highlight the teeth, and just say white.
It was
That's
weird.
What everybody's teeth look like. It was outrageous.
And then his father, the casting was bad because he looked too young. The vampire supposed stepfather.
But then again, you can...
It all was just weird.
To play devil's advocate with that, you could argue that they never age, so he could have been much older than them, but you know, he didn't age.
Oh, yeah, but it didn't
work. It didn't work.
I wasn't 15, okay?
On an adult point of view, I say steer away from it. If you're a 15, 16, or 17-year-old, I say go for it and have fun.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are driving this market. They're the ones who have made it a $100-something million hit in the States, and, you know, that's what's going to drive it. Did I enjoy the cinema experience? Not really.
When people laughed, I did.
What I enjoyed the most was us leaning over to each other and bagging the film. That was the most fun to me. I just felt that the film was kind of weak. It was just the word that you used before, I think you used it when you said that everybody's just wet.
Wet.
The whole film just feels wet.
And it's set in Seattle, so that's a problem.
And it's always wet. I just found the problem with the film was that everybody plays the problem.
Not Seattle, sorry. Outside. It's in Washington, outside.
And everybody plays the problem, and everybody is so depressed. Yeah. The whole film felt like it needed antidepressants.
It really did.
Anyway, so that's Twilight. And that was our experience with Twilight, and I'm glad to say that I can now put it to bed.
Yes.
And I don't have to think about it anymore. I'm holding in my hand the press kit. Goodbye. Okay.
And that probably brings up a case. It's interesting about the press kit.
Yeah,
87 million pages of dead trees instead of just a disc or something.
I don't understand in this day and age. I mean, when I was going to preview screenings back when I was doing video reviews for Radio 3AW in Melbourne, we used to get these sort of press kits.
And this was like 20 years ago.
And this is
25 years ago?
End of the 80s, okay? Yeah. So, and you look at it and go, we used to get these press kits. And in fact, the press kits were even more elaborate back then. They were, but they didn't use as much paper in the actual thing.
It was like
four pages, but then they used to include the 8x10 shots and stuff like that for print, right? And they used to come in a nice folder, and it was all very nice. Nowadays, I mean, both this and Big Stan, we've both been handed these reams of paper.
Why would they not? If they want you to cut and paste stuff out of it, why not put it on a
exactly.
CD?
Exactly. My point is, our point is that you hand out a CD at the door. CDs are only like, you can literally buy bulk CDs now for like, 15 cents a piece.
Be cheaper than all that paper.
Absolutely. You mass produce them. You've got the digital press kit, and out they go.
It's insane.
And, I just don't understand. If you're going to release a paper press kit, make it something worth keeping. Yeah. If you're not going to make a paper press kit, then they could email this information.
So distributors out there, just a little heads up. We don't quite understand the paper.
As far as the environment is concerned, I don't understand this much paper being used.
Crazy.
Okay, second film this week. I actually went to see on my own. Mirren didn't get to
Why did I cop out? Which film was it?
This is the film. Now, this is where it gets confusing. I've actually written the review, so we're not going to harp on this one. I wrote the review on geekactually.com. You can go there and read my full review.
I wanted to see this.
You did.
I was doing something.
Now that I've seen it, though, I can actually say quite honestly that I think it's probably a rental. Okay? This is the film. Now, this is where it gets confusing. In Australia, it's called Four Holidays, and it opened last week. In America,
why, for the love of God, why do they change the titles?
In America, it's called Four Christmases.
Could they not spell Christmas here? Plural of Christmas? Actually, I did see somewhere one of the spellings was with two S's and then an E-S.
Oh, dear.
So maybe they
God.
Had trouble with the spelling.
Maybe. And the thing is, the Four Christmases actually suits the film so much better. Mm. Because the film is about four Christmases. Here's a little bit. Here's a little bit of a trailer, and I'll explain what I meant by that.
Hey, Dad.
Mom, hey.
Listen,
hey.
Mom, I got bad news. We're not going to be
Dad,
able to make it tomorrow.
It's me.
No one was more upset than we were last year that she got into a happy
ending
and deal
make
with
it
the situation.
Every year, Brad and Kate spend the holidays avoiding their families.
No a sensible
flights
thing.
Are coming in, and no flights are going out.
This isn't happening. Do you have a sister airline?
No, I'm sorry.
How about a cousin airline?
No, we don't.
How about like an airline that your airline's felt up before?
All right. Now, the trailer makes it look like a broad comedy. And the first thing that has to be said about the film is it's actually a drama that has
it's a dramedy.
It's a dramedy. And it's a drama that has funny stuff. All right. And when it's funny, it is actually quite funny. And when it's
kind of like Australia.
Oh, sorry. What was Spaz Luhrmann? No, sorry.
Shh. All right. Only took $40 million. Yeah. Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, shh.
Oh, you're such a bitch. We'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. All right. So Four Christmases or Four Holidays / whatever you want to call it is basically the story. Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn basically play a couple who avoid their families at all costs over Christmases. They lie to their families, as you heard in the trailer.
Sounds like a very good idea.
So they can go off to Fiji and do these holidays. They're both yuppies. They don't want to have kids. They're not married. They don't want to be married because all these things, they just realize all these things are problems. And it all gets summed up by one line in it where basically Vince Vaughn says to Reese Witherspoon, "You can't spell families without lies."
Oh, I love it! So, why is this a rental?
Exactly.
Why? Anyway,
so it's a cute film. It doesn't quite work in its entirety because Vince Vaughn, unfortunately, is the letdown. And I know there's probably Vince Vaughn fans out there right now who want to throw their iPods out the window.
But we love Vince Vaughn.
I love Vince Vaughn.
And aren't there enough parts to make it worth going?
And he has moments. The problem is that because it is a drama with funny bits, not just a broad comedy, that we needed to see the characters grow and arc because it's all about the fact that they have to stay home, they have to go see the families, and their families are estranged. So they have to go to four different Christmases in one day, the mother, the father, then the mother, and then the father. And over the course of this day, they kind of learn about themselves and their own lives.
Okay, but I'm really curious. I mean, what's not to like in the sense that we like him, we like her.
I love her.
Yeah, and I mean, dramedies are okay. And why is it taking in $1 trillion?
I think it's actually taking in $1 trillion because it's that time of year and there isn't else. There isn't.
I know, isn't it weird?
There isn't
hear?
A lot.
Where the fuck's Tim Allen with his Santa movie?
I know, and I was looking at the trailer selection on iTunes of upcoming films, and there's two or three more holiday films coming up. There's one that's actually a Hispanic one with John Luigi Zamo and stuff like that. And where are they? Why aren't they out now making
it's
a fortune?
Very strange.
It's very odd. I think this film is making a lot of money because really your choices are, if you're 17, you go see Twilight. If you're a...
No, 15.
Or 15. No, but, if you're 15, you go see Twilight. If you're a complete moron, you go see Australia. And and otherwise, you go see Four Christmases.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're saying it's a dramedy, which implies that people might go and be disappointed because it's not a comedy. So I'm surprised that word of mouth is still sustaining it.
Yeah, I actually am too. I am surprised.
Maybe you're just, you know...
Maybe I'm a bit jaded. I don't know.
Maybe I have to go see this and tell you you're wrong.
Look, I actually did laugh out loud a couple of times. Mm-hmm. There are,
but you did it Twilight too, so that doesn't.
I laughed out loud intentionally.
You laughed at them, not with them. All right?
Sorry, I laughed with Four Christmases. Right. I laughed at Twilight. All right,
okay.
With Four Christmases, there are certain moments that save it. John Favreau, director of Iron Man, is in this
always
film,
good value.
And he plays one of Vince Vaughn's two brothers, and he plays an absolute trailer trash redneck. Moron with the whole shaved head, you know, Westy look and the whole bit, tattoos all over himself, who does nothing but beat Vince Vaughn up the entire visit. And he is hysterical. Mm. The brothers are all actually named after the cities that they were conceived in.
Oh,
so,
God. Shades of the Beckhams.
So it's Houston and... what are their names again? It's Houston, and you find out that at the first family that Vince Vaughn's real name is actually Orlando, and Reese didn't know that, you see, because he's changed his name.
That's hilarious.
And so the two brothers are both these morons who like to tag team wrestle just for the fun of it, and they keep beating the crap out of Vince Vaughn the entire time. What is interesting about this film, and I actually mentioned this in the review, is that the parents, the four parents, are all played by veteran actors, and there was a very interesting piece of casting, because... Mm. And I was looking at the budget to this film, and the budget is $80 million. And I thought, this is not an $80 million film. Of course, the money was spent on the cast, right? They spent a fortune on Reese, a fortune on Vince, and then they populated it with, you know, this stellar cast. It's got Robert Duvall playing his father. It's got Sissy Spacek playing his mother. Mm. It's got Mary Steenburgen playing her mother. And it's got John Voight playing her father.
Yeah, but they're going to be getting big bucks, these guys.
Well, not big bucks, but big enough to inflate.
The big bucks has gone to Reese Vaughn and Favreau.
And Favreau, yeah.
Now, Favreau, I mean, it just as a side note, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that for people who don't know, you know, that Favreau and Vaughn came out together.
They co-wrote.
And they
Swingers.
And
right.
Started their careers together. And it seems like Favreau has gone on now to mostly do directing and make his career that way. And he's done a lot of acting as well, but he's mostly now doing his directing. And Vaughn is going and doing his stand-up.
It was a Wild West comedy show.
Yeah, you know, bonking Jennifer Aniston and stuff. And I think he's
are they still together?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
I think, oh, God, it's in over a month.
I was about
month,
to say,
honey.
I thought they'd broken up.
I just think it's interesting that he does really well with the comedies. I mean, he does really well with Dodgeball was great and, you know, things like that. And it's interesting that you're saying he couldn't maintain this because you're thinking, and I'm thinking, what? Because he's really good with his comedy. I think
is it
the drama hanging out? Because he used to do drama as well.
I know.
And Favreau is kind of streaking ahead, it seems.
It
like,
is.
Why?
And see, but the thing of what I found.
But then again, it's a hit, so it doesn't matter.
Well, that's true. Exactly right. But what I found with Vince Vaughn was he is playing exactly the same character that he played in Dodgeball, that he played in Wedding Crashers. It's that fast-talking...
There was no depth in it.
There's no depth to the character at all.
Match her.
And what's happening is, throughout the film, you're seeing depth in her, and you're seeing the soul-searching in her, and we're supposed to see them both go through this, so at the end, when we have our resolution, you believe the fact that they really are meant to be together and everything else. I didn't believe him. Mm. I just kind of felt like with the leap and a bound, he's back, everything's fine, and I don't want to give away
the
ending.
He's kind of coasting.
He's coasting, and the problem is that there's no sense of realism to him because he matches every circumstance with let's just talk really fast and baffle our way through it. And what it was interesting because I was speaking to my lovely wife, Katie, who I seem to mention every show, but I was talking and she was saying maybe he has a shelf life. And I think that's a really important point with him. I think what's going to happen is as he's getting older, and this is her quote, she said, because if he keeps playing that character when he's older, it's just going to be creepy.
It's interesting, isn't it, though? Because he's guaranteed, at least for his next film, because this film was such a hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
All that matters is the money. And she's basically helping lift it and everything, too. Mm. And it's going to be interesting then... after the next one.
Yeah.
Unless the next one, again,
if
he surrounds himself with enough good people.
And if he's really smart, he'll go back and make another film like The Wedding Crashers or like Dodgeball or like Old School or one of these. And it suits him to the ground and it'll be a big hit and then he'll keep going on. I think people have to be very careful because let's remember, yes, he did start as a dramatic actor, but let's remember that he wasn't actually brilliant as a dramatic actor. No. He did a lot of films. What was that one where he was in the like the Bangkok prison or whatever it was? Where what was it called? Anyway, he did, and then of course he played Norman Bates in Psycho. And
talk about laughing at you
exactly. Oh, and that's my point. Wait. My point is that he didn't hit his stride until
funny.
He started to do comedies. And I remember when we saw Dodgeball, and I went, "Oh, this guy is good," you know, and he's funny. And then Wedding Crashers, he was really.
And you know
funny.
What? I have no sympathy laughing at him for that because honestly. If you could look at someone doing that part, Anthony Perkins, which made him, after that, you thought Anthony Perkins couldn't do anything else because it was so creepy, that he would think he could step in after Anthony Perkins had defined it. That's why I think you're going to step into Rhett Butler's
role.
Absolutely.
That's a stupid idea.
Stupid.
I've got IMDb. A Return to Paradise. That's what it was called.
Yeah.
That was the one where he was in a prisoner in some prison. But it's interesting because I'm looking over his listings and you forget that he had these wonderful little cameos in things like Be Cool when he was the rest of the street, the black talking white guy and everybody thought he was a joke. Mm. And he was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. And he was very funny. And the thing is, when he's playing that fast talking, that's when he excels. The problem is that four Christmases four holidays, he needed to tone that back, and he needed to let us
Maybe
see.
Maybe he's the better director.
Well, he needed the. And this is one of the problems I think with Four Christmases. In fact, the guy who directed it, Seth Gordon, was a documentary filmmaker, and so this was basically his first attempt at a dramatic piece, or at his first attempt at
dramedy.
I'm trying to think of the term. Fiction. Yeah. At a fiction piece, and. His inexperience shows through a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a good job. I mean, he was the guy who directed King of Kong, the one about the guy who was the master Donkey Kong player.
I read a really interesting quote today from Cloris Leachman, who you all know recently from being on
Dancing with the Stars.
And she's 82 years old. And she was in this interview, she said she doesn't go back really and look at most of her stuff. And they said, "What about Hanging Up?" She goes, "No, I didn't like that. I didn't go back and look at it." I said, "Why?" "I didn't like the way that Diane Keaton directed me. She asked me to say odd things to Meg Ryan as her mother."
Diane Keaton didn't direct it.
Well, she's saying maybe it was in the scene with her. I don't know what she's saying. And so I was so put off. I didn't want to see what I did in it. The point being that it really does matter how directors handle actors, and some directors are directors and some not. What did you find?
It is Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton.
Isn't that funny? All these years, I've always thought it was a Nora Ephron film.
Well, did she write it?
She wrote it.
She wrote it, yeah.
She wrote it. But I always thought it was a Nora Ephron film.
No, because
she wrote it. And I just assumed it was.
It's funny. She didn't like the direction. And it's just so funny. Like when you watch something like The Big Chill, as you know how much I love that. And it really shows that Lawrence Kasdan worked for 6 weeks, which is unheard of. You even get any rehearsal, but he did 6 weeks so the cast would really feel comfortable with each other. And it does make a difference. And so you're talking about a guy who maybe that's part of the problem, is that he's a documentary filmmaker who now has to work with fiction.
It's possible. And that's not to say that you can't do it, because the guy who directed...
Well, the saying we have, you've got to be director-proof. Vince Vaughn obviously isn't director-proof.
But the guy who directed Road Trip, which was a teen comedy, it was a university-level comedy, blah, 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 bunch of teens, was a really funny film. Mm. And that was also directed by a first-timer because he'd come out of documentary filmmaking. He had made a documentary about teens and universities and stuff like that. And so basically he was working with material he knew, and he made his first feature. Mm. And that worked really well. So it can be done.
But over and over and over, this expression I drum into actors is to be director-proof, because that means if it's not a good director, you'll be fine. If it's a great director, you'll be brilliant. But you've got to basically be able to look after yourself if the director is not giving you anything. So I just think that obviously Reese did okay, right?
Reese did wonderfully. So, but then again, I think she is director proof.
Exactly.
Reese has been in many mediocre films where she has excelled.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no doubt about that.
She's
fantastic.
She's
wonderful.
And if any of you out there have not seen her early show,
I highly recommend it. Freeway.
It's just remarkable.
Remarkable.
You will not believe it.
If you haven't seen Freeway is basically a retelling of Little Red Riding Hood told by from the perspective of complete white trash. And she is hysterical.
And her co-star is
Kiefer Sutherland.
And it is just It's magnificent. I just
it is,
just
but
it's not. It's not the Reese you know. It's not a comedy.
That's right. It's not the Reese you know. It is brutal, brutal film, and not for the faint of heart.
But it's not great. But I can't take torture films and stuff like that. But this one didn't bother me at all. It's just great. She's just rough as guts.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. So you should see that.
And I was about to say, if bad language offends you, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast anyway.
No. And isn't it interesting though? She will never go back, which I think is sad. Never probably because she's now known as this, you know, comedic or light drama.
She's become the girl next door.
Yeah, even in Walk the Line, she still wasn't doing anything too much. And I'd love to see her do something like Freeway.
Well, I was about to say, and it's a shame because her early films, she did Freeway, she did Election, and she played these really weirdo, absolutely out there characters. And I love those.
Brilliant
actress.
I'd
love to see her more doing that. Now, just an Australia update. We kind of alluded to this before. As we all know, Australia had a budget of $130 million, which was about about $160 million Australian, most expensive Australian movie ever made.
Plus the marketing.
Plus the marketing on top of that.
$40 million.
Now, a film with this sort of budget, anybody who knows anything about film will tell you that these sort of blockbusters need to be an immediate success. They need to strike gold in that first weekend. Word of mouth carries it through. And literally, these films can make their money back in the first week if they're big hits. Australia, costing as much as it cost, I'm looking at the exact latest figures from boxofficemojo.com. In 13 days of release, it has made a staggering worldwide, so this isn't just America, worldwide, U.S., where are we?
Dun, 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 dun.
$41 million. It's a Christmas dinner, guys.
All right. And let's just say, I mean, I'll go on the record and say it. I personally do not like Baz Luhrmann's films.
No,
and,
neither do I.
I'm afraid that I kind of feel like, I guess they did when O.J. finally got convicted, if not for the thing he originally should have been convicted for. I just think
But that's kind of like saying, isn't it good that Paul Newman finally won an Oscar for Color of Money, even though that wasn't the film he was supposed to win it for?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But at least he got one in the end.
Exactly. And at least O.J. got his in the end.
And I just think that Baz Luhrmann has made really messy films, and this one was a real mess. And there was a review today by Peter Costello, who's our ex-treasurer in the last government, who said the same thing. He said, if you're going to do history, make it real history. If you're going to do fiction, make it complete fiction. But to have things, he just pointed out things like...
He was just looking at his factual accuracy.
Because you want to make it worthy, so you want to have it historical. And it's interesting to see somebody point out, the Japanese never set foot on Australian land.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's what the film deserves. And
in the big roundup when Jake and I spent, you know, half an hour talking about Australia and so forth, the biggest problem I felt with the film was that the supers at the beginning and end, everything felt tacked on. It all felt like they were trying to make it important. If they had just tried to make it a big romantic epic and just enjoy the ride and don't try and make it worthy, it'd probably be more successful. I think
it's monumentally stupid. In Australia, overseas people may not be aware of this, but there's a thing about the Aborigines are warned in advance on our documentaries and things like that they might be upset because they don't like images of their dead to be portrayed. So they don't want to see photos. They don't want to see anything that might portray someone who has died. Now, particularly family. Now, Baz puts this up before a fiction film.
These people aren't really dying.
It doesn't apply to fiction, for God's sakes. And it's things like that just drive me insane. I'm sorry.
Everything about the film was, they kept trying to squeeze out as much worthiness as they could out of this film, and it was a big mistake. And I think it's reflecting in the box office. It's a double-edged sword. I'm sad the film is failing because I thought this would be, if it was a success, at least it would encourage bigger films to be made here. But at the same time, I'm not surprised that it's failing.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Well, to me, it feels like there's justice because if people liked it, you go, really? What? Pardon?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So that's our reviews.
Yeah.
Let's do a little bit of film news. I got a couple of little things here, and I think you've got a couple as well. I'm not sure. But you always come and surprise, me.
I want you to do the tech thing, though, because I'm dying to know.
All right.
Let me ask you my tech question.
All right.
Because it came up in an article.
All right. Let me just find my tech article.
It is a big issue for me and for maybe other people out there.
Oh, while I'm looking for this, do you want to bring up Robert Prosky?
Oh, yes. Vale Robert Prosky. He died. Robert Prosky, an actor, 70, would it be, God, he died just before his birthday.
And he's 77 when he died.
He would have been 78 on the 13th, I think, 13th, yeah. Here's a guy that you'd all know if you saw his face on IMDb. IMDb, that's IMDb.com. he was in NYPD Blue. Not in NYPD Blue. Hill Street Blues. Sorry, Hill Street Blues. I always get those true.
He was in Joan Carpenter's Christine.
In everything. Yeah. If you saw his face, you go, oh, him.
Great character.
Character actor who never stopped working. And, yes, he died. So it's just, it's funny. Down here in Australia, we don't often, many times people die. Beverly Garland, for instance, I just saw, she died the other day. It's one of those people, if you saw her, you go, oh, her, God, she's
I'm just saying the name's not familiar.
You should look her up because I'm telling you.
Oh, I will look her up.
You will know Beverly Garland. And it's funny, it's often I find at the end of the year with the Oscars, they do the memoriam, and you go, really? They died? Oh,
yeah,
my God.
It's always an interesting section, that.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, I always find it also interesting to watch the memoriam on the Emmys and the Oscars, because how many of them were crossovers?
I know. I mean, this woman, she was born in 29 or something, and incredible. But she's it's one of those people, she seemed young forever, too. And she was on, God, she's far back as Mary Hartman. But she started her first, let me just tell you when her first role was. We go down. Some people there are television actors that are so unbelievable because they never stop working. We don't know their names,
but you know their face.
And that was highlighted many years ago with the character actor Norman Fell, who everybody knew his face. Mm. And then he did the American Express ad saying, "You don't know my name, but you know my face." And then it comes out of American Express. But here she is. She did DOA. You know, the original 1950.
I've got the original DOA.
Yeah, and she was Beverly Campbell in that. I mean, it's just phenomenal how much she has done. So her, and you know how I think it comes in three, so there's probably a third one that I probably don't even know down here. But anyways, rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Robert Prosky.
And Beverly Garland.
Okay, so the article that you wanted me to bring up was article that was in.
Let me tell you and ask you for the people.
All right, you.
I'm channeling those people out there.
Okay.
All right, I have a laptop, as you know. That's all I use is my Mac laptop. Now, you used to tell me, because you are my guru, my internet guru, and I've always been confused about what you tell me. Turn it off, don't turn it off, make sure that you don't have the screen on, blah, blah. And you told me I could just put it in rest by...
In sleep mode. That's right.
Okay, so I want to know, sometimes when I put it in sleep mode a lot, and then get up the next morning and open it again, it seems to me that it gets... It's feeling a bit tired. Is it a bit tired? Or, you know, when do I... The article was headlined that I saw.
Okay.
How often do I have to turn off my computer?
Okay. The article is in the Sydney Morning Herald or smh.com.au. How often do you turn off your PC? Now, it's a very interesting question, and there is no easy answer to this. However, there is an easy answer to you.
Oh. Okay? Oh, good.
Because what he's actually referring to is PCs in general. What you're referring to is a laptop.
Yes, okay.
And the different rules apply to a laptop. Okay?
Right.
With a standard PC, so a desktop PC, Mac or PC, Linux, doesn't make any difference. I'm talking about the hardware here, not the operating system. Okay? The actual box itself, should you power it off? There are two completely different schools of thought on this, and it's a very hard question because there is really no easy answer. And I think there was an easier answer years ago. I don't think it's such an easy answer today.
Right.
The easy answer years ago was it was actually better for your computer to stay on all the time rather than turning it off and on, because the wear and tear of actually booting up your machine, such as this article pointed out, which is one of the things, was heat. Mm. There's also the wear and tear of your hard drive having to spin up or spin down and all this sort of stuff. They would say that running your computer all the time would basically maintain an even flow. There wasn't that wear and tear, and it was actually good for your computer to stay on. Nowadays, hard drives run a lot faster. Computers run a lot hotter because the faster your chips are, the hotter everything gets. You could argue that there is more wear and tear happening on a machine as it's on, that it might be nice to give it a rest once in a while. There's techs out there all over the place right now disagreeing with me or agreeing with me. I have no idea. I'm not trying to be the definitive authority on this. I'm just telling you what I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I, as a rule of thumb, turn my computer off when I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
But as a tech doofus and as a person who does a lot of downloading and stuff like that, I generally have my computer on a lot. It can run a week, 2 weeks before I actually shut down. But when I don't need it, I'll turn it off. Now, there is an environmental concern here, which is, of course, we don't run our cars 24 hours a day. We don't run, you know, electrical items we don't need, we turn off. We don't just let our TVs sit on all 24 hours a day. We turn them off when we're not using them. And the reason for that is, of course, that even if it's on and sitting idle, it's still chewing electricity, and that electricity is an environmental issue and so forth. As far as your laptop is concerned, that's a different story. Laptops run hotter. The thinner machines get, the less air there is inside them, they run hot. You have a Mac, and Macs, generally, Macs run hotter anyway.
Because they're hotter machines.
Well, that's because they're thinner machines, and yeah, you could go that way if you wanted. I mean, my MacBook Pro can get so hot I can't have it on my lap. Mm. I mean, these machines do run hot. With a laptop, no, you don't generally run it 24 hours a day. It's not built.
But I mean, when I close my lid,
when you close your lid, when you close your lid,
did it go night-night?
It goes night-night. When you close your lid on your MacBook or on your PC laptop, basically it goes into sleep mode. When it goes into sleep mode, it essentially has turned itself off.
Like the TV in standby.
That's right. It's gone into standby. The hard drive stops spinning. The chips aren't running on full power. Basically, everything goes into a low power mode, and it just sits there idling. It's not even just idling is the wrong word. It sits there and basically turns off, but with a little bit of trickle power running so that if you open the lid, it knows to start itself back up again. The difference is that when you open it back up, it comes straight back to where you left it rather than having to reboot the whole thing. So with the rule of thumb with a laptop is if you're just putting it into sleep mode for the night because you're going to get up and work on it straight away in the morning, just close your lid, put it into sleep mode. It's not causing wear and tear on the machine because it is asleep, essentially. And you next morning you'll open up. If you're going to have your computer off for an extended period of time, like you're traveling or something like that, and you're going to be – or you don't need it for a couple of days – then turn it off.
Okay.
Power
so,
down.
So what I'm doing at the moment is letting it go night-night with me.
That's right.
It's fine.
Okay. Absolutely.
Should I be sleeping with it under my pillow like I do?
No. Not a good idea. And in general, I'm with desktop machines, they have sleep modes as well. You could put the machine into sleep mode if you want to. However, if you don't need it, then why not shut it down?
Right.
You save some power, save the environment while you're at it. You know?
Okay.
I generally, since I've gone Mac, I generally don't run my computer as hard as I used to. My PC, I've got a PC here as well. It's a workhorse. And it used to literally never get turned off. And nowadays it gets turned off a lot more because I don't use it so often. But when I was using it, it never got turned off. It would just run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This would account for the fact that I have actually burned out several power supplies and fried the hard drive and done a whole bunch of things on it. So it has worked very, very, very hard. And in fact, I think the CD-ROM is about to die on it. Every time I put a disc in now, it goes... So I can't be good for it. So
you're working it too hard.
Luckily, DVD writers are actually very cheap for PCs now, so I can go out and buy another one for about $50. So anyway, so that's the answer to your question. As best as I can answer it, there is no definitive answer on this, and there are, as I said, there's going to be tech people right, left, and center who have completely polar opposite opinions.
Well, but tech people do that.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, the wonderful thing about the tech industry is we really don't know anything. We just make it all up, all right? We make it all up. No, that's not true. All right. While we're on tech, I'm going to throw some more tech. I've only got three tech articles, so we'll just throw these out very quickly. First one says that Dell, and I know your reaction to this is going to be wonderful, Dell is releasing... and I love that everybody is using this name. The car uses it. This is using it. They're releasing Tesla Supercomputer. Oh. It's the world's first supercomputer, and it will run 250 times faster than the average PC.
Oh,
and it's headed for the
God's
mass market.
Sakes, invented by a man for a man.
And Mirren said to me when I mentioned this to her at the beginning of the show, she said, "Why?" And my answer to that is because you can.
Because we can.
Geeks believe in one. There's a one saying with us geeks, which is bigger, better, faster. Bigger the better. Absolutely.
You know why?
The faster,
because you
the
have
better.
Penises. You know, it's just ridiculous.
That would say that we have little penises. I'm quite happy with my size and girth. Thank you very
the
much.
The size of your penis is in inverse ratio to the size of your computer.
Now, all this speed comes at a cost, mind you. In this day and age, when you can actually go into a shop, I saw them advertised in Australian dollars. So in American dollars, about 40 cents. But in Australian dollars, I noticed that there was actually you could buy a laptop for $600 Australian now. So PC laptops are dropping in price. So in this day and age where you can buy a computer so cheap, The Dell Tesla supercomputer will set you back, this is in British money, so it will set you back £4,000, which equates to $9,100. So you got to be really serious about your computing to actually want that. I just want to point out that Little Geek is standing at the door with a video camera taping us. Hello. Oh, thank you. He's shooting footage for our trailer. Very nice of you. Thank you. All right, so that's Tesla. We'll get that out of the way. Very, very quickly, the Coopface virus has turned up on Facebook, and it is...
Yay! You know how much I hate Facebook.
Yeah, but this could be a bit of a pain in the ass for all those PC users out there.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
But it, oh, well, that serves them right for using a PC.
Yeah, so. But I don't... You know what? We're going to do a Mac show one day where we talk about this, because I think there is actually a real incredible threat to Macs at this point. But
I understand that, but I also, you know, I just got fed up. All you people thinking that you've got 3,000 of your closest friends. It's so idiotic. So you got a virus.
Okay, so the Coopface virus basically attaches itself to
Coob?
Messages... Coob. It's K-O-O-B-F-A-C-E.
Why is it Coob Face?
Ah, who knows where these names come from. But anyway, it's basically comes to you as a message. It could be on your wall. It could be in your email. It could be anywhere in Facebook. It basically says, hey, and there'll be some personal message from one of your contacts. And it'll say something like, oh, you were so red-faced at the party last night. I shot this video. Come and have a look.
And, of course, you're so egotistical and self-centered, you want to
see it. Absolutely. You click on it, and then you get a little message saying, oh, your Flash player is out of date. Please update. You hit OK. Bam. Virus in. And you're done. Rule of thumb with everything, whether it's Facebook or your email or websites or whatever. If you don't know what it is, do not just click yes.
Oh, he's taught me that so well. If it says ICSI, leave it alone. You know, Stop picking at it.
If half the people out there would actually stop and think about what they were clicking on once, and this is in the PC world more than anything, if you click and think about what you're clicking on, we would have far less problems with spyware.
No, I agree 100%. How many times have we actually seen it in real time? We see people, you know, with their computers, and they start, oh, look what I got clicked. What did you do that for? You got a virus, you fool. It's like those of you that think those lotteries are real. Guess what? Yeah. They're not.
Second rule of thumb on the internet. If it seems too good to be true, it is too good to be true.
They don't want to give you money from Nigeria.
And you know what? You're not going to win sneakers from Nike or cars from Microsoft. They don't give stuff away. And nobody ever just pulls your name randomly out of a hat.
And if you think that what I'm saying is silly and it doesn't exist, you need to watch more Judge Judy. She actually gets these cases where people are going, I took the check from the lottery that I won and I took it down to my store and then it bounced. It's like, you thought it was a real check. You thought people really wanted to give you money from London.
What did you think?
Oh my God.
Okay, I want to... very quickly, just mention, because we mentioned it last week, we mentioned it the week before, but it is this weekend, so we got to throw it out there one more time. This is still tech-related, but it's also censorship-related.
Oh,
now,
I hate censorship.
The Internet Censorship Bill, there's been a little bit of movement on this. This is this, go back to previous episodes and find out more details, but it's basically Australia wants to introduce a mandatory firewall onto our internet.
And they want to make us China.
Exactly. Now, getup.org.au, which I've mentioned before, and stoptheCleanFeed.com are the two sites in particular where you'll find out information about what they're doing. And they're trying to raise money, and they've got a petition going at getup.org.au. So go sign the petition. They've already gathered 85,000 signatures.
Starting to fall apart, which is good.
Now, the test pilot for this is actually supposed to start now, and ISPs are dropping from it like flies. Mm-hmm. Last we heard that the only two ISPs that are going to support this test program are iiNet and Optus.
And they're only supporting it to prove that it's wrong.
That's what I was about to say. iiNet, in an article, if you go to their homepage, you can actually find the article. They say why they disagree with it completely. They wholeheartedly don't support it, etc., etc., etc. When asked why they're engaging in the pilot, they said because they want to prove it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Now, the test pilot is going to go ahead, but we don't want this thing to happen. Go sign the petitions and so forth. Now, why I'm bringing this up again is because I actually had a little bit of a dialogue with the people at StopTheCleanFeed.com on their forums, and they're asking podcasters out there to mention it and to really get it out to the people. And I have the dates and places of the protest. Now, this weekend, December 13th, there is a nationwide protest for this internet censorship bill. The places you will find this, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Brisbane Square, Brisbane. Town Hall, Sydney, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. State Library, Melbourne, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. Boy, they're having a long one, aren't they? Mm. In Adelaide at Parliament, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. in Hobart at Parliament Lawns, 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. and in Perth at Stirling Gardens at 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Those are the details. You can always rewind the podcast to get them again, so I'm not going to repeat them. You can also go to stoptheCleanFeed.com, and you'll find all the information there. And this is a worthy cause.
And if you don't think it's important, you're an idiot.
Absolutely.
Because you must stand up and say against things, or you'll end up with Nazi Germany and book burnings.
Now,
you cannot let the thin edge of the wedge with censorship get started.
Absolutely. And I
a free net is a good net.
And I'm going to give you an example of how this affects things. In England, they have a mandatory filter going. Not like the one they want to instigate here, but there is a mandatory filter. Now, what has happened is that Wikipedia in England, this is the last piece of tech news that I have for the day, and I've saved this to last because I wanted to get past that little bit. Wikipedia has basically been blacklisted by the internet filter because there is an album cover for a group. Now, what is the group? It is the...
who are they?
I've got the article in front of me. Hold on. It was...
unbelievable, this.
It's to block the Virgin Killer article. Virgin Killer article on Wikipedia, which was a naked young girl, is on the album cover of this band. And because of that, it was deemed as child pornography, and the entire site was basically blacklisted. Now, they have opened up a hole, and the way they've gotten around the thing is to basically bring everybody in through one IP number to get into Wikipedia. The problem is now Wikipedia can identify individual users. And because Wikipedia is designed by everybody being able to contribute, they've had to stop anonymous contributing on the site because they don't know who's contributing. Because
and if
it's all coming through one IP.
This might be valid. Let me just say that this album cover is available on Amazon and everywhere.
It's ridiculous.
It is a ridiculous. We are now starting to use child pornography as this catch-all to get censorship everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, all it is utter the words, but it's child pornography. And everybody goes, it's not child pornography. Stop it. Because what you're going to eventually do is you're going to have the boy you cried wolf and you're going to demean real child pornography.
Let me ask.
It's just so upsetting.
Let me pose the listeners a question. Nirvana's album Smells Like Teen Spirit has a baby floating in a pool naked. Are we going to ban this album cover because of the floating baby?
Are we going to say because a naked baby or a necrophilia baby or what's the baby? I mean, you can't. I mean, once you start down that path.
Words fail me on this. It is just.
Read
just
your history if you don't think.
Dreadful.
As they say, if you do not read history, then it will be doomed to. Those who don't know it, it will be doomed to repeat it. I mean, what the Nazis did during Germany is they went and decided. The government decided what cultural things, what art and so on would be government approved. And you can today look at the depraved, unquote, art that they deemed was depraved, all this wonderful art. And the German art that was okay was of Olympic looking Aryan people and stuff.
And Hitler done up like the Messiah.
Yeah, exactly. So very, very serious anytime there's censorship.
And I would like to pose the thought that what is the difference between blocking ISPs or blocking websites and book burning?
Absolutely. It's exactly the same.
All right, so that's our harp on censorship. Yes. We harp on censorship a lot, but that's our harp on censorship. Have you got trivia for us today?
I've got the trivia that poor Oprah Winfrey's embarrassed because she's fat.
Why?
Again. Well, she's fat. And she says she's fallen off the wagon again, and she was going to wear this dress to the inauguration, but she's too fat, so now she doesn't know what she's going to do because she wants to wear it to Obama's inauguration. And evidently she's back up to 100, a couple hundred pounds or something. And
I thought she was finally over this.
Well, yeah, she every couple of years she says she's over it and she's never dieting again. That's when she gets down to size 10. And it's really sad, you know. But it doesn't help when you hear things like there's a recent picture on the net of Alba. What's her name? Jessica Alba. What the thing is she's on. Anyway, she looked beautiful.
That's probably Cosmo or
something. And then what they did, instead of leaving well enough alone, they trimmed her down even further with Photoshop. And so, and it doesn't help with people like, Angelina Jolie, who's just been on the red carpet with Brad for the Curious Case of Benjamin Britten. And if you
Benjamin Britten?
Benjamin Button, sorry.
Button.
If you look at the Yahoo, they had, sorry, I saw it, Huffington Post, they had photos of her looking glorious and like she's like size six or whatever. And you know my theory. I do not believe, and you will never make me believe, that either she or Pamela Anderson or any of these women actually gave birth. Actually got pregnant or gave birth.
I'm sorry, Pamela Anderson doesn't look like she gave birth.
I'm sorry, two weeks later, her stomach was as taut as a trampoline. I'm sorry, this is impossible. And Angelina, if I don't believe she has time to exercise that much, so how is she looking like that? She looks happy and healthy and all that.
Well, she didn't look so healthy in one photo I saw her. She looked really like Skeletor.
Well, on this one, she looks too thin, but she's glowing. It might be drugs. I don't know. It's so upsetting, because people like Oprah Winfrey, who is like the most powerful woman in television, and she's really great, and she does so much for the world and everything, and then her biggest worry in life is that she's getting fat. You know, I mean, I just think it's pathetic. You know,
it
Oprah, let it go.
It is a bit pathetic.
I mean, you know, the other thing is we forget, and we don't want to talk about it because we don't like to talk about ladies' things. The woman is 54 years old. She's going through menopause. You gain weight on menopause because your metabolism slows down to less than, you know, idling of a car. It's just unbelievable. So you just look at a piece of food and you gain weight. And it's very hard to look, well, it's impossible to look like a 20-year-old. So I'm just saying, it's sad.
I think she needs to embrace who she is rather than who she wants to be.
And if you think, if anybody out there thinks it's crazy, well, then just let me ask you last time you saw somebody going, oh, you know, George Clooney's worried he's gaining a bit of weight. You know, these people men don't think twice about it. And we don't either.
Speaking of being able to accept yourself for who you are,
yeah.
I'm going to join you on the trivia facts this week, mm-hmm. and I'm going to say Britney Spears says her boobs are too big.
Oh, my. her mouth is too big, and her head is too small.
I just turned the mic. We've just been joined by Little Geek. Hello, Little Geek.
Yeah, I have some news, actually, but I'll wait till after.
All right, let me finish Britney first. Britney Spears has been considering a breast reduction. It says she can't fit into any of her old costumes.
Oh, God.
This all came about because she was at a recent awards thing, and she wore this little top that literally came down to, like, the tops of her nipples, and she almost fell out of it several times. It's like, well...
Get a bigger top with straps.
I'm looking at a current picture of her right now, and her boobs don't actually look that big.
Well, I'm sorry, she's 27 years old, and it's ridiculous. And I'd just like to say, I have a friend who had a breast reduction, and for anybody who doesn't know, it's a really, really terrible operation that takes about a year to recover, and is so prone to scarring because you must keep the breasts strapped and bound, or they pull.
Well,
and I
look at it and go, for a girl who has been through so much,
she won't be able to dance
psychologically over the last 2 years or a year and a half, I really don't think she wants to be doing major surgery at this point.
She wants to go on a tour next year in March.
She says, to quote Britney Spears, I have a love-hate relationship with my boobs. She says, at the moment, I hate them. I want them smaller.
I have a love-hate relationship with your brain. Right now, I hate it.
And all I can say is, Britney Spears, oops, I did it again.
God. All right, what's your news?
I'm just adding on with Britney.
Yep.
You got good enough to be in Fairly Odd Parents because there's someone.
Oh, that's right. Britney Spears. Britney. Was it actually Britney doing it? I think it was just an impersonator doing it in that.
Yeah.
In what?
Yeah.
Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, Fairly Odd.
I mean, I'm just saying she's like an idiot.
She's good enough
she is an icon. I mean, that's the thing. She's an icon. The other piece of trivia I have that I thought I'd throw out there, and this would actually right up your, because I know you love things about the Holocaust and stuff like that. Kate Winslet is in a new movie called The Reader, and apparently she's come under incredible flack, and I noticed that she's even made the cover of Vanity Fair on this issue. Film critics have condemned Kate Winslet.
Before you say that, all I've read for the last couple of months is that this is an Oscar.
She's going for the Oscar.
Oscar Award, and everybody thinks this is the greatest role, and it was all fantastic, and nobody even talked about what it was about.
Yep.
And
then what happened was at a critics screening, a particular critic, it was a British film director, where are we? Finch, his name was. What was his full name? Anyway, Charlie Finch. Charlie Finch decided to condemn the film because there's too much nudity. And basically saying that Kate Winslet's got too much nudity and it trivializes... too much nudity and it trivializes the Holocaust. Now, what was interesting was that this thing caught on across England, and basically all the other critics, even if they hadn't seen the film,
I love that,
started to basically condemn the film as well because of the nudity, basically saying that Kate Winslet's a nubile Nazi and all this sort of stuff. And Kate Winslet has now said, you know, yes, there is a lot of nudity in the beginning, but, you know, it's 100% justified by the story and all this sort of stuff. And I think it is one of those things where you sit and go, this is such a non-story. Kate Winslet this is not her first time being nude.
It's ridiculous. As I used to say on Saturday Night Live, to paraphrase, Finch, you ignorant slut. And excuse my cynicism, but I would think that this would be a very good time when we're getting up to starting to get into the pre-Oscar. As everybody must know, the end of December is when it locks off that the films have to have been shown, and then we start getting to Oscar contention nominations. It would be a very good thing now, just because she was starting to be talked about as a contender, to get someone to start bagging her on an opposite campaign. So,
I need to get some water.
That is just ridiculous. And, if I hear one more time somebody saying, but that trivializes the Holocaust, who makes you the arbiter of how the Holocaust is supposed to be presented? I mean, she's playing an ex-Holocaust guard. So,
you know what? I think there was actually sex during the Holocaust.
I'm sorry. It just, nudity trivializes the Holocaust.
They're now saying, I'm looking at the related coverage, and one of the headlines basically says, Kate's nudity may cost Oscar.
Oh, for God's sakes. Yeah, this sounds to me like some smear campaign as far as I'm concerned.
It sounds like bad. I actually felt, quite frankly, that Kate Winslet should have been in Australia. I think she should have been playing Nicole Kidman's role.
I was the one who said that.
No, but we talked about it. And Jacob disagreed. But I actually think that she...
Well, you need anyone who could do an English dialect to start with.
I actually said my choices would have been... it would have been Kate Winslet who would have been my first choice. My second choice would have been Kate Beckinsale. Or Beckinsale, and my third choice probably would have been Rachel Weisz. Your argument was Rachel Weisz isn't soft enough, but
I think she was. But I think Kate Winslet was just perfect. But I don't think that would have saved the movie anyway. So
no, I don't think so. No. I think that was beyond saving somehow. All right, I'm going to mention another podcast now.
What did you say about Under an Hour?
Oh, it's just on an hour now. Okay. We always run a bit late. Well, we'll kind of bring ourselves to a wrap up with a couple of little things here. First of all, you had somebody else, but it looks like... I said you had somebody else. When I mentioned this, you'll know what I'm talking about. Apparently, the star of The Nanny, Fran Drescher, has now basically thrown her hat in the ring because she wants to be a contender for Hillary Clinton's seat.
Okay, which I don't get because everybody's saying Carolyn Kennedy's asking for it. So this will be interesting to see what happens.
I think we've got a bit of a bun fight happening.
Well, especially with the bun fight in Illinois with a guy getting in trouble for trying to sell the seat. So I don't know.
And I think I'm worried about Darwin merit goes to that man.
Oh, that man. I don't think, yes. What is wrong? The governor of Illinois trying to sell a Senate seat. Wow. But somebody said now maybe they can clean up the corruption in Illinois.
Yeah, but they've been saying that since Al Capone.
Well, that's true.
So, all right, so that's our Fran Drescher. And I'm going to mention another podcast, and then we're going to wrap this up for the week. I have discovered...
Oh, this is fun.
Now, this will get us our explicit tag right here.
If my mouth doesn't, this
actually,
will.
We've been very tame this week, so I think I'll just throw this out there. Hang on, you're not on mic.
Oh.
Sorry, stay again.
Do we have enough time?
All right, well, give me a bit of news and then we got to wrap this up.
Okay.
Quick.
There's this movie on YouTube and it's called Batman New Times. And
yep.
It's with those building blocks I used to like.
That's what they did with the old-fashioned building blocks. Yeah.
And
Nikki's obsessed by stop-motion animation on YouTube.
Except it's CG.
Oh, it's CG, so it's not really with those blocks there.
Yeah, but they just
they modeled them. Yeah, oh, very interesting.
And Batman's actually played by Adam West's voice.
Oh, they actually got Adam West in.
Yeah.
Well, what's it called?
It's called Batman New Times.
Batman New Times. Go to YouTube and have a look for it. Okay. I'm going to go have a look at that. I want to hear Adam West doing it.
If it's him. Yeah.
If it's him. All right. Now, we're going to...
We're
going to do final thing. We're going to give these people's address out because I told them I'd give a shout out to them.
Oh, they sound wonderful.
Because I love them. They're my new
heroes.
My new heroes. No, not quite. But if you go to iTunes, I don't know if they're available anywhere else at this point, but at iTunes, if you type in the search phrase, porn... P-O-R-N +++, the digits +++, like C++, the programming language, you will come across a netcast called Porn++, which is two guys who sit around and basically review and analyze all the latest in porn films.
And one's a real dude.
One's a real dude, and the other guy is kind of like the straight man, and they don't hold back. This is not for the faint of heart, let me tell you right now.
So if you're squeamish about sex, cover your ears now.
But the thing that I thought was very interesting about this particular podcast was that I discovered them because they're in the featured podcast area, which is a place that I covet getting to. And I thought, how the hell did they get there? So I had to listen to their podcast, and it made me laugh out loud at several points, and I won't repeat some of the stuff that they say, but they go into great detail about describing...
They're porn reviewers.
They're porn reviewers, and they are great details, and they talk about their masturbatory practices and everything, and it's a very funny podcast, and well worth listening to. And you know what? All those people who think, oh, porn's terrible, nobody ever listens to porn, blah, 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 blah. This thing's got on the featured list. It has got some serious downloading happening to it.
In what, 4 weeks, you said?
In four episodes. So they've got four episodes. It's a weekly podcast. They are already in the featured category, which means a lot of people are listening to this, which means a lot of people are getting their reviews from this. I wish them all the power in the world. And they have an accompanying website, which you can find the link to on iTunes. Well worth having a listen
to. Just hilarious.
If you are at all interested in porn at all, they've got a section where they talk about their favorite porn stuff. They've got called The Vault, and they looks like their awards, and their knowledge is pretty good. These guys have been watching a lot of porn.
They say they are their mid-20s or something?
They're mid to late 20s, and they've watched a lot of porn.
And we're waiting to see if the Christian right get a hold of their podcast.
Before anybody criticizes our show, Nikki's sitting there laughing along with us. He actually has no idea
what we're talking about.
But I heard you actually saying it when I came home from school.
This is one of my big things about people going on about, oh, you can't expose children to this. And my argument is this, that at Nikki's age, I said to him, right now he goes, girls, ew. When he goes, girls, ew, that's then, when they start to notice.
That's right.
Not now.
At this point, Nikki really doesn't know what we're talking about, so I have no problem saying, I'm not going to say anything explicit now, so because there's no point, and Nikki is here, so we won't
but
go into it.
It's just a hoot.
But it is a hoot, and well worth having a listen to.
And there's nothing better than sex and comedy together, as far
absolutely.
As I'm concerned.
Absolutely, and I don't think, it's not... They're not, and the thing is, they're very reverential about it. Mm. They really do take it very seriously. They love their porn. Mm. And I love my porn, too. Mm. I watch a fair amount of porn when I get the chance. It's, I have no problem with porn. I have no problem with porn at all.
I am, again, against censorship of any kind. And if people are... we used to have an expression that's politically incorrect now. But to say I'm free, white, and over 21, let me watch my porn. And it's so ridiculous that shows that, like the movie, yeah. Zach and Mary make a porno, they've got them not wanting to show the
they
film.
They had to use stick figures on the poster.
And then they didn't want to put the posters up because they'd take off the word porno, which is exactly what happened with the vagina monologues. They didn't want to use vagina.
And if you remember, in America, the original
poster...
Did
they have to use pachacha?
Oprah's vajayjay.
And if you remember when The People versus Larry Flint was released, they had to change the poster because the picture of the woman in the cross position... him in the cross position in front of the woman's panty waist, they just found objectionable. So they had to take that up. In Australia, we actually got that poster, which I was very grateful for. But in America, they were forced to remove it. Anyway, Porn Plus Plus, well worth having a listen to. And that's going to bring us to an end. Don't forget to listen to next week, our first annual Christmas special.
Yay!
Everybody's looking forward to it.
Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Yesterday I watched a couple Christmas movies.
Yes, he's already started. We're watching Christmas movies, and we're all compiling lists of our favorite Christmas stuff.
Yes.
And Jacob Oberman and Mirren Lee and Nicholas McVeigh will all be here in studio next week. I don't know how we're going to make that work.
Yeah. But why don't you come up and Skype from your bed?
No, we're all going to be in here, and we're all going to share the mics. We're going to make this work. I'm going to leave us today with one quick clip, and then we'll sign us off. For all the geeks out there, Mirren is not a geek, so she doesn't get this.
Aww.
This came today, and we're just going to play a little bit of this, and then we'll sign off for you. This is the very latest trailer from the new Terminator film. Just came out today, fresh off the presses.
What year?
2018.
What happened here?
Judgment Day happened.
I knew it
we can win this war.
All right.
Sounds like Christian Bale as Batman. Oh, it sounds so contrived.
It is the latest in the Terminator films, Terminator Salvation. I actually have absolutely zero hope for this movie.
And I have absolutely zero respect for this movie.
The reason why I have zero hope for this movie is because James Cameron bailed on the last film, so we don't have the original creator there anymore. It has none of the original cast. It's got Christian Bale doing his gravel voice.
Oh, is that Christian Bale doing his voice? What's wrong with him?
Doing his gravel voice, and it's
which didn't work in Batman,
and it's directed by McGee.
Oh my god! Now I loved 1 and 2, but it's enough, guys.
I love 1 and 2.
You'll go blind.
So we'll leave you on that note. You can find that at apple.com. They've got the full trailer up. This is the brand new trailer for Terminator Salvation. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. All of life's questions are answered in the movies.
Twilight.
And YouTube.
And go to YouTube. And we will talk to you next week for the first annual Christmas episode.
Bye. The headline for this what's so great about Max?
Oh, I saw that headline. I haven't actually read the article. I was going to bring it into this show, and I thought, wait a minute. I have 4 more stories. I forgot about these. That's right. I sent myself another email.